Welcome to National Liberty Alliance Week Report. Today is Monday, November 3rd, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you are listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the book of Ephesians, and we'll be reading tonight Ephesians chapter 4, read by Alexander Scorby. Ephesians 4.
Chapter 4. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that ye walk worthy of the vocation wherewith ye are called, with all lowliness and meekness, with long-suffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, even as ye are called in one hope of your calling. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all, and through all, and in you all. But unto every one of us is given grace according to the measure of the gift of Christ. Wherefore he saith, when he ascended up on high, he led captivity captive, and gave gifts unto men. Now that he ascended, what is it but that he also descended first into the lower parts of the earth? He that descended is the same also that ascended up far above all heavens, that he might fill all things. And he gave some apostles, and some prophets, and some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers, for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive, but, speaking the truth in love, may grow up into him in all things, which is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplieth, according to the effectual working in the measure of every part, maketh increase of the body unto the edifying of itself in love. This I say therefore, and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of their mind, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart, who being past feeling have given themselves over unto lasciviousness, to work all uncleanness with greediness. But ye have not so learned Christ, if so be that ye have heard him, and have been taught by him, as the truth is in Jesus, that ye put off, concerning the former conversation, the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind, and that ye put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. Be ye angry, and sin not. Let not the sun go down upon your wrath, neither give place to the devil. Let him that stole steal no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that it may minister grace unto the hearers. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of God, whereby ye are sealed unto the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you, with all malice. And be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you.
Okay, right. The queue is open, by the way. If anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a star 6 and 1 if you're on a phone. And let me reverse that. Yeah, star 6 and 1 if you're on a phone. And there should be a button there if you're on the app or browser to get into the queue. So again, star 6 and 1 if you're on a phone. I do see someone with their hand up, so I'll take that person first. They didn't get into the queue, but they've had their hand up for a while. So let me go over and unmute that person. The guy's name is John. Tell us what state you're in, John. You're unmuted. John?
Yeah, I had to unmute it. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. What state you're in?
My name is John. I'm in Missouri.
Okay, what do you got? You got the mic.
Well, does everybody know how I dug around my Missouri Constitution, and I found out that the cops get their paychecks for life, and they're fixing to give it to you on the 5th of this month. They're fixing to give it to the prosecuting attorneys and the judges. The cops keep all the money from the civil. And then every cop that touches a supposed criminal or a convicted criminal gets a chunk of money. Did you know that?
No, I'm not surprised.
I kind of feel like, it bothers me, and they've got us under, I'd have to read this article I got right here about us being under civil arrest or, let me see. It's insane when you dig it all up and look at it, how crazy it is. Like everybody says, it's just wow. And they wonder why, I feel like people's all got price tags on top of their heads by the
Yep,
cops.
that's what it's all about. It's about money and power, and that's
Oh,
the
yeah, oh,
problem.
it has been our whole lives. No matter what you do. But these people have left a trail, a million miles long. And my biggest problem with all this is being as they all take an oath of office. All right. So as what do they say? As how can they be ignorant to the Constitution and that it's against the federal Constitution, since they have to take an oath to uphold it? So all of them are committing treason knowingly. Period. Every last one of them.
Well,
Just like they.
that's even also if they even take an oath, because
Yeah.
we got to question a lot of that too. But look at him.
It kind of reminds me of like Carl says, if you can't be an instrument of the law and be ignorant of the law. If a man walking the street cannot be ignorant of the law.
Well, the problem is the people are ignorant to who we are as a people to begin with. They're
Right.
ignorant to the Constitution, and they're ignorant to the law of the land. So they don't even see the problems. I mean, of course, sometimes they feel the problem because things just don't sound right. I mean, like you're just saying, someone gets extra money if someone is arrested or found guilty or whatever exactly it was that you said. I mean, that's what it is. And if you go to tax court, and tax court is a court that they just made up. And you'll find a tax court in every federal court building.
Of
And
course.
in that tax court, it's a rented room. It's not part of our judicial system. And it's a facade. And they pay, they'll hire judges from within the building. They'll hire a judge to pay them to sit and, hold that facade up, and then they offer them even a bonus if they get a guilty at the end at the end of the case, and if there's a jury there, it's a stacked jury. All federal juries are stacked.
Of course.
We've done a memorandum on that, laying out through the questionnaires that they have in the federal court system. So. Yeah, courts of justice are gone. They've been gone for quite some time. And of course, that's our main focus here at National Liberty Alliance, is trying to bring courts of justice back. One of the things I was also thinking of doing, I was going to send out an email this week, and I didn't do it. I held off because I want to think a little more about this, but I'm going to throw it out there, and maybe people might want to think about it, and maybe you can respond a little bit. You know, we have a big problem with individuals that are running for office that not only, I mean, they just come in and do whatever they want. This is a fact with pretty much all these people that we, you know, kind of elect. But we have this situation, for instance, we got a communist down in New York City running for mayor. They're saying that this guy is probably going to win. We'll see what happens. But we have Bernie Sanders and AOC, I think that's the proper initials for her anyway. I mean, they're off on socialism or communism and so on. You know, this really isn't the problem if the administration understands or knows the Constitution, because the Constitution, it makes it clear that they have a duty to guarantee a Republican form of government.
Yes,
not a communist, not a socialist, not a Democrat, a Democratic form of government, a Republican form of government. And in the case of us here in the United States, it's a natural law Republican form of government. So man has nothing to do with this. This is all has to do ultimately with we the people and the laws of nature, of nature's God, clearly laid out in the Declaration of Independence. And of course, we have government by the consent of the people. And therein is our problem at the moment.
Yeah, you know, people sleep.
Trump can, you know, bring back things to a point where, you know, we can have what we should be having, and even more than we've even experienced in our lifetime. You know, he could take us back 200, 250 years and give us back, which is what he said he was elected for. He says, I was not elected to take power, but to take power and give it back to the people. And so he could do that, and I think that's what his I know that's what his plan is. And his whole administration's plan is the same thing. But the problem is people don't know how to have government by consent. They have no clue. They don't know when people are breaking the law. They don't understand civil law is an abomination to our way of here in the United States as the government that we the people ordained and established. And that's the problem. So it's an education problem to begin with. Now I was thinking of trying to do something with this and potentially even going out for lawsuits for all these individuals in various places that are, you know, having getting elected to positions and bringing in, you know, communism or some strange ideas. You know, we have a lot of problems even with people trying to bring in, you know, Middle Eastern religions. And I've heard of communities that are executing the law of certain, you know, religious, political beliefs. Mm-hmm. And but we can correct all this. The problem is we need an education. You know, I'm thinking if we can get, and there's a lot of other things we can do. You know, we could do, and maybe we'll do a paper to the president on this in a presentment from the grand jury. Where maybe we'll do something and try to educate him in the area of a writ quoranto. And I'm sure they've got to understand what that is, but maybe not. You know, a writ quoranto ultimately is a tool of the people. This is the king's tool, we the people.
Yes.
And a writ quoranto is a requirement once it's served. By what authority do you act? Where do you get this authority to be able to do this, that, or the other thing? And they have so many days, 3 days ultimately. I mean, they can get more time than that, but 3 days ultimately to respond to that paper. And if not, they forfeit their office. So, I mean, that's something we can do. I don't know. You know, even if we don't succeed at that, it's still another thing that we're putting into our case. You know, we can prove, for instance, that that this is a conspiracy, what they're doing, because we've done hundreds of cases in federal courts, and they all respond the same way, whether it's in California, Texas, Missouri, New York, Pennsylvania. It doesn't matter where you're at. All these judges do the exact same thing, and every single one of them has closed the doors of justice. You can't get into a justice court; they don't exist.
Of course.
They've closed it up. So this is conspiracy. This is treason, and we can start to set the stage maybe with this also. But I think what we really need, we've got quite a few people that have taken the course. that we put together, Court Access and the Common Law. And maybe those people who have taken those courses and feel reasonably confident to some degree, maybe they can send an email to me. You could send it to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org. If they would like to get together, we can kind of discuss some strategies. But we will need people in other states doing the same thing.
I have an idea.
So anyway, this is something we could think about if people are interested.
But I have an idea about this.
Yeah.
I've read John's book. I would like to tell John, thank you for your service. Your Court Access and Common Law, that book is beautiful. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. What about doing the thing that's at the very end about their surety bonds? What about pinging their surety bonds, taking their money, and then getting them thrown out? And if nobody will bond them again, they can't get back in.
Well, the plan we're going to execute, trying to really get rid of all these people, is the original 13th Amendment. I don't know if you're familiar with that. And that became law, I believe. It was 1818 or 1819. And some of our founding fathers were still around at that time. Jefferson and Madison was. And so really, you know, once we do that, then we deal with the bar attorneys, and they're kind of gone. The problem with the bonds and with the oaths, trying to get them is like pulling teeth. It's very difficult to get. They just hit you with silence. They don't respond. I put into most of my cases, a requirement for all the officers of the court within this case is to file in the case a copy of their bond and their oath of office. They never do it. They ignore it. Even if I press towards it, it doesn't go anywhere. And they won't do it. Because they've gotten away with so much. And people, well, first of all, the court system, people generally have no clue what's really going on in there anyway. And they don't know the law. They think that they can't understand the law. And so that just creates a bigger problem. So they really have discovered that no one is really paying attention, at least no one that could do anything about it. And the few people that can, you know, they'll crush them.
Yeah, the hard part is getting people educated. You got to go from the people that can understand his law book and what it says and what it's talking about. You got to get it back down to the blue-collar people that, you know, the only reason why I know this is from my plumbing career that my boss used to yell at me the quotes out of the code book, and I didn't understand. I told him, you know, can you put it in layman's terms so I get this? And until I went and got my master's and started doing the code book, did I understand what it was all for and how it all worked. You know what I mean, as far as legal terms?
Right.
Of what I was doing when I was installing the pipes in the walls is what he was telling me. Mm-hmm. To find. So that's how I transfer over to John's book and understand John's books, because I had to learn that, and then I had to go in front of the board and take a test. Well, what I do with my hands is different than what the book says. The book's an actual description of it, the proper fittings to use and the proper way to put them together and all that fun stuff. But that's how come I took on to the law part and all that, and I listened to Carl for a long time. I got cops that run from me. The back of my van's got Article 6, Paragraph 2 on it. And they won't even pull me over. I don't understand these crooks. They've been getting away with this so long.
Well, again, people aren't paying close enough attention. They think that law is too difficult. the U.S. codes apply only to people who are either working in some commercial activities or people who are working for government agencies. And that's what the statutes and regulations are for, to apply to them, but not to the people. We, the people, are under law, L-A-W. And in both Black's law and Bouvier's law, it defines it ultimately as common law. And common law is described very clearly in the Declaration of Independence as the laws of nature and of nature's God. And so, therefore, we the people are under common law. Now, common law is really quite simple. There is due process, and due process is a structure the way the courts run, and there's nothing wrong with that process, to at least most degree anyway. But But common law really is written in the hearts of men. We know the law. We know when a wrongdoing has been done. You know, thou shalt not kill.
Yeah,
you know.
I had my son ask me this one. He's like, well, what do you mean by that, Dad? I'm like, well, let's think about back in the Western days. Okay, two men stood out in the street, touched backs, walked 10 steps and shot each other. That was how those two men decided to settle their qualm. That's why the sheriff did nothing. But when somebody robbed the bank, the posse came in because the sheriff couldn't take care of it by himself. I said, you know when you do wrong. You walk to somebody's house and shoot him. You know in your mind that you messed up, period. End of sentence. I said, right now there's so many laws, nobody knows which way's left, up, right, or down. No wonder nobody knows whether they're men, women, furries, attack helicopters, or what, because they don't know which way to go. They're so lost in everything.
Mm. Well, again, people aren't paying attention, and we are not under written law by men. You know, equity, or is also called positive law, and equity and positive law is legislative law. And legislative law is only for, again, people working for government agencies and or commercial activities. But, you know, going back to what common law actually is, in a case, it's a construction of maxims. Truths of facts, you know, truths that cannot be denied. You know, all men are created equal. That's a maxim. We are innocent until proven guilty. That's a maxim of law. And maxims really ultimately is simply common sense. So you combine common sense with the facts, and you build your case and follow the due process. And it's that simple. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. But expressing yourself and your points on paper, that's probably the hardest thing to do. And the best way to learn to do the best on that is to read cases and papers by other people. You know, we've got lots of papers up on our website that you can read through. And the Supreme Court rulings, there's a lot of them we've got. And you can read through a lot of that. And, of course, our founding fathers, you know, their writings. Again, all these things are part of our law and who we are as a people. The key thing now is we have to get our courts of justice back, and that's the difficult part. We're working on it diligently. We're trying to educate Trump's administration and trying to open their eyes to certain things that we perceive that they probably don't understand. Maybe they do understand some of this stuff, but we're not hearing it. I'm not hearing it anyway. For instance, we are a natural law republic. I'm not hearing that expression from this administration. I'm not even hearing the expression that we're just a republic. And so that is a little alarming. And the problem with that, of course, is because of lawyers, bar attorneys. They've totally destroyed it. And the numbers nation. Most of Congress are lawyers, and all the people around Trump, a lot of them are lawyers, and that's a problem because they don't know what common law really is. They don't. Well, again, I'd like to use the word natural law. They don't know what natural law actually is, and they do believe that we are structured under Rome, and that we're under Roman law. That's what they're taught in school. And that's what they believe. They're true believers. And to try to change their thinking and mind, the moment you start talking about it, they've already been alerted that, well, when these people come in and talk about this or talk about that, oh, they're crazies, this, that, or whatever the case may be. You know, there is a book out there. I haven't really had the time to read through it. I did skim through it. And I believe we have it up on our website somewhere. I got to go look for it, and maybe I'll make note of it next week if I can remember. But there's a book that we found that is for judges and how to deal with people that try to bring this common law into the courts. That these people that try to bring, you know, the idea of being a sovereign individual. That kind of gives you a little bit of an insight on why these people think you can't talk to them. You're not worth their time because they've already been taught in their mind that they're right and all this other stuff is crazy. And, you know, there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance in action. And and the worst thing, you know, it's, well, I'll leave it right there. Anyway,
yes.
uh, What else you got? Because we've got to move on to others.
No, that's fine. I'd like to thank you guys for your time.
Okay, thank you. Let me see if I can find you and mute you back up.
King Nothing.
I think you're under anonymous. See, nope, that's not you. I don't know, Jan or Eric, you think you can find him and mute him back in? Oh, here it is. I got it. Yeah, that's right. You're John. I don't know why I can't find your mic. There it is. I got it. Okay, you're muted. Okay, I know we do have some people in the queue, but before we get over to the queue, Jan, do we have any questions that were sent in? Jan, I don't know if you can hear me. I know you're unmuted, but I know you had a problem last week with your mic. Can you hear? All right. I guess when you get your mic going, just pipe in and let me know. Meanwhile, we'll take some people in the queue. We do have two people in the queue, so we'll pick up on them. First person we got out there is Brent, or Brett. Brett, what state you're from, Brett? I know we've spoken before.
Hello?
Yep. What state you're from?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. All right, you got the mic.
All right, so I wanted to seek some direction on this. I asked a public, a lawyer for my daughter, and I asked to see if we could get the case file, and we were denied. So, how do you handle something like that?
I vaguely remember talking to you about your case, I think, and the lawyer asked for the file, or you asked for the file from the lawyer? What exactly?
Yes, I did.
So the lawyer has the file. You wanted the lawyer's file.
Right. And my daughter was present, so but we were told that neither one of us could get the file because it's a law or
well that person is claiming fiduciary authority, and you have to ask them put onto the record how it is that they got fiduciary authority. Okay. It could be that, their system is set up that way because the last thing they want is a parent to be involved in their case, in the case of a child when they're trying to, you know, get their end results, whatever that may be. And the lawyer is not your friend. You know, it's a major problem that you have going right now. I forget exactly what the case was about. I don't know if you want to give us the topic or something. A little bit of
disorderly conduct. So,
it's a ridiculous thing. And you're in what?
Yelling.
You're in a village court or a town court or what?
This is all the way to county.
So you're in the county court, which is very weird. Very weird. Again, I don't know how a lot of these states work. A lot of states do a lot of different things. I know how New York works. But I don't understand why a case like this would even be in a county in a county court, because if I recall, it was really kind of a ridiculous thing anyway. I think it was something with a broken phone or something. Was that it?
This is for yelling. It's a new case.
Big deal. They yelled. Okay, yeah, now we got to go to court. And what was this, in school?
No, this was over the summer.
Okay.
Just had a hanging out with friends situation. Teenage stopped us being loud, and so they all received citations.
Yeah. All right. Well, again, a citation is what are they looking for? They're looking to fine to make money?
Don't know. They just want to.
Well, I would do a jurisdictional challenge and also a challenge on the authority that this lawyer might think that they have, to represent your your child and not allow you to participate when you are the party. You were the one that God trusted to give authority over your child, not a lawyer. Of course, they take all power and authorities. They are the minions of the New World Order. They're the ones that destroyed this. They destroyed an entire republic, as a matter of fact. And they've been working at this for a long, long time. I don't know. I think if I recall, you don't have enough knowledge, really, to be able to write papers and understand due process and how it works, to challenge jurisdiction, looking for what authority, by what authority they act. I would do a writ quo warranto. Again, I could tell people what to do, but they have to understand what these things are that need to be done. And that's why people, everyone, should be taking our court course, which is court access in the common law, because you'll never know, and one day you'll have to go into court. You may come to a situation and you want to sue somebody and that has injured you or whatever, and you need to be able to understand how to do that. And it would be okay to hire a lawyer as an advisor to understand how the system works and take a look at your work and give some thoughts and ideas, but you can't let this lawyer take control of your case because, the state's always going to win.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, they're looking really for a fine, I presume, right?
I'm guessing it's either some fine or some type of contract that becomes an invitation back.
There are a lot of things you can do, and you can even get to the point where you can sue them for denial of due process. But again, you have to understand how the process works, and you have to understand the basics. And again, let people know, most people from here do know this, but under Education Starts Here, just click on, come down a few blocks down and click on Court Access in the Common Law Course. And when you click on that, you get all the information about our course, and you'll get, this is a 90-hour course, and you'll get the first session, which I think is about 3 hours long, for free, so you can kind of listen to this and see one. And it's not only audio, so you can see how things are going to go, and of course get kind of a flavor for it. So, but again, I really think everyone, this should be taught in schools. We need to teach our children in schools not only who we are as a people and that we're a Christian nation, but we need to teach our children how to take care of their own legal business. And that should start right in K, from K through 12, because you can start giving some of the building blocks really early on in life with our children. And our children need to know who we are and understand their duty to give back. And this needs to be taught in schools. We need to get the Bible back in school. It was taken out of the schools in 1963. And we need to put it back because we had a good foundation in the minds of our children, prior to 63. But we've lost all that. And they were actually destroying it even further back than that, of course. But in any event... All right, back to you.
Okay, thank you. That was my question.
All right. I don't know. Did you decide to take the course?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I've taken the course.
You are taking the course, Court Access in the Common Law.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because it's important, especially you're stuck in a court system, so you're getting really a little bit of a taste of what's really going on, and that should concern you so that you need to know when this comes up again. You may not have too much control over it right now, but the big thing is, the worst thing in the case sounds like they're going to fine. And here's the big thing. They're not going to allow you to have any participation. They've taken away your fiduciary authority over your child. They've taken, they've kind of muzzled you. And yet, if they find that they're going to fine your child, who do you think they're going to come out after to get the money? They come out after you. And so it's this whole thing is upside down, but we allow it to happen because of ignorance. So that's the shame, and that's the problem. Okay. Any final words, Brett?
No, that was...
Okay. Yeah.
I have one question for tonight.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'll toss it out there, and you can do with it whatever you like. It's do you know how deep the snake pit is? And I have ideas thanks to your book.
Well, it goes all the way down to hell. It's the best I can tell you on that. So, but I'm not sure exactly what the, you know, I presume it's how bad the courts are, you know. How bad the government is, ultimately. So anyway, I'm not too sure. But anyway, it goes all the way to hell from my perspective. That's how deep it is. All right, I guess that's it for the questions written.
You're done.
Huh?
Yes, you're done, John.
Okay. All right, thanks, Jim. All right, yeah, you sound terrible, by the way. Have you looked further into trying to repair the problem?
Yes, I got bit again by Windows 11. When it goes to sleep, it loses all its settings.
Oh, it loves to do what it wants to do. I really think you need to come offline and put Windows 10 in and do it all offline. It's tough to figure out how to shut things down, so you might want to go back. What was the one before 10? Was there an 8? Before 7? Was there 7, 8, and 10? Is that what it was?
7 is good.
Oh, 7 is definitely good. And I think it's strong enough to be able to, at least it'll run all your programs. So get a copy of Windows 7, and then and 7s you can shut off. You know, it's pretty easy to shut off updates and connections or any of that stuff. And no matter what you come on with, if you come on even with Windows 7 or even XP, okay, at some point in time you're going to open something up of Microsoft, and they're going to connect to you. They're going to start to download the 365, I think they call it, and try to take control of you if you got the Word in there, Microsoft Word. And then they're going to violate your whole computer. They're just going to, you know, shut it down. I mean, that's what they did to me. 5 days down. I know you and I spoke a little bit about that. But you know, if you could do it, you do everything offline and make sure you shut everything down and then don't open ever anything from Microsoft like a browser or anything like that, anything that's executable. So, but that's what I suggest. You know?
Yep.
All right. Let me move on to our next caller here. We got, looks like Mark. Mark, you got the mic. What state you're from?
You hear me, John?
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
This is Mark from Indiana. I've talked to you quite a bit this year about a sewer district that our county was implementing, if you recall that.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. Well, as of October 31st,
let me ask you a question before you go further. Just give me a brief understanding. Is they're trying to do a sewer system? Is there a lake or something nearby?
Yeah, there are 13 districts, and the first one they're trying to implement is the 7 lakes that are chained together, and there are 628 residents on those 7 lakes.
And they're trying to say that there's some kind of a pollution into the water or something, and that they want to.
Yes.
It's a money making deal here.
Yes.
$25 million
dollars is what it's supposed to cost.
Oh yeah, there's big dollars.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
Well, you may be able to shut it down real quick because they like to do things slyly and without obeying the law. Yes. But go ahead. You want to say something?
Yeah. I want to bring good news. It's because we did get it dissolved. We did get the County Regional Sewer District Board dissolved.
Okay.
Yes.
And so but getting them dissolved, their job may be done enough that the plan moves on. Does it move on? Are you sure it's shut down?
As far as I know,
that doesn't sound good when you say as far as I know. That means that there may be something else further knowledge. But go ahead, tell me what you know.
Well, the letter that the IDEM, Indiana Department of Environmental Management, says, it says, I'm writing to inform you pursuant to Indiana Code, blah, the Indiana Department of Environmental Management has declared the Marshall County Regional Sewer District dissolved and entering an order for distribution of all assets owned by the district after the payment of liabilities. IDEM has determined that the project or operation of the district is not economically feasible, fair, or reasonable, and that the district failed to file a modified plan for the operation of the district within the time prescribed by IDEM. This letter, accompanied by the order dissolving the district and directing distribution of all assets after payment of liabilities, along with correspondence from the Indiana Finance Authority dated October 16th, 2025. It's a 12-page document from Clint Woods, the commissioner of IDEM.
Well, so, in what you read is pretty clear that, that they're done with. And the fact that they didn't perform what they were supposed to perform by, I guess, giving some kind of a document or plan of some kind. But that tells us that they probably didn't do an environmental impact study. And that's what they were trying to beat out. Well, you can't do anything. They can't even touch that area around the lake or touch the ground until they do an environmental impact study. That is the law, period, because we have to know what the impact is.
But they ignored us every time we mentioned that. But anyhow.
Well, again, they will ignore you as long as you don't know what to do. And if no one picks up the ball that does know what to do something about it, they're going to ignore you. But, you know, this is, I don't know if you know or heard of Robert Schultz from We the People. One of his first big cases was exactly a case like this. And he pushed the fact through, and he took it into the courts, and he won. And he wasn't even a lawyer. And that's when he decided he was going to do something about some of the problems around him. And he started to study the law and started to do a lot of court cases. And that was, I think that was actually his very first one. Pretty sure it was. And he won that case. Yeah, he won it on the fact that they didn't do the environmental impact study. They were trying to get around because that's very expensive, and they have to prove a reason for doing this. I mean, if there is no pollutant and no problems feeding in, you know, that leaching into the waters, then they have no reason to go forward trying to even do this to begin with. You know, then it's all about money and control.
The interesting thing is this has never been done in Indiana before. This is the first time a regional sewer district has been dissolved.
Mm-hmm.
So just want to.
They dissolved everything because they were. First of all, they incorporated to do what they wanted to do to begin with, okay? And that's really where the dissolving is coming through, that the whole process is dissolved because that entity, which was going to perform this whole thing, probably under the name or in the name of the state or the town or whatever, and so that's the dissolving. But, yeah, that paper was that you read was enough information to make it clear they're done.
Okay. The problem is they – this the sewer board took out a $3.5 million bond anticipation note, which they've spent about $1.3 million of that. So now,
That should be returned. That's returnable, but because it's never been executed, it never gone to the point where it was executed.
Well, they spent the $1.3 million on engineering firm.
Yeah, but I'm lost on the bond though. If they put up money for the bond, how much money did they put up for the bond?
You know, I don't know. All I know is it's $3.5 million.
Well, anything that went up for the bond, though, is returnable because the project never went forward. But as far as the engineering, well, first of all, whose money was it? The people's money?
The county didn't pay for it. They got a loan, this bond.
Now, who got the loan?
The sewer board.
And who's liable to pay off that loan?
Well, our county commissioners or county council says they're going to pay it.
Well, that should be that's a lawsuit right there.
I think
why would they take that on? Okay,
correct.
That means the people are going to pay for it.
Yes, right.
It always goes back to the people. They don't worry about nothing because they got all the money in the world and it's coming from our pockets.
That's right. So that's our next battle. But I just want to share you that this is a good win.
That should be an easy win too, though. It really should be.
Okay.
First of all, it was unlawful for them to proceed with engineering before the environmental impact study. That's to begin with. Just to begin with.
Good.
And you need to get that position. You have to get the entire, you know, all the information concerning the process that they went through and the facts that they failed to do these things, that they wouldn't. And also, you know, when they create this, you need to look into, if you're going to get involved in this, trying to do something about it, you need to look into that, how this was structured, who put it together, who was liable, who were the signatures, and by what authority. How is it that they turn this over, the waste of money and all these things, how is it that they turn it over to the people who have to pay for this? Why?
Right.
You know? And I'll tell you what, I would think about, in the plan of suing, I'd sue the engineers. If I was involved with this, I would sue the engineers too, because they should know better. They know the requirement, and they kept silent, or they talked about it, and they all decided to keep silent, okay? And that is fraud.
Well, the same engineer firm has done many other sewer districts.
For the town, of course they have, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
in the other counties.
They know exactly what needs to be done, and they didn't do what was to be done. They tried to be sneaky and defraud the whole system. No one's going to pick up on this, you know, and probably grease some palms on the way too, you know.
Yes.
If you really look into it, there's all kinds of stuff going on there. But again, you know.
Okay. I just wanted to share that good news. And one last thing I wanted to share is, I finished your course, your government by consent course. It took me quite a while, but it was well worth it.
Oh yeah.
So I just wanted to share that, and I'm
you know, a really, really good course that everyone should take is the civics course. And
yes,
and
I did that one too.
Yeah, the civics course is free. I mean, government by, you know, the one that you took,
Government by consent.
Government by consent course, yeah. That one, we just ask people to be a premier member, which is someone giving $5 a month or more to support what we're doing. But yeah, you took the civics course. That's good. Everyone should take that civics course, because the civics course really gives you enough information. There's a lot of documentaries in there. Ed Griffin did these documentaries. Goodness, I got to believe we have probably about 10 or 12 of them in there. And by going through that, you start to see exactly how they captured us and did what they did in order to destroy our republic. So it gives you a good picture of how they did it. So everybody should take that course. All right, anything else, Mark?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
What a call. All right, by the way, we only have one other person in the queue. Anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a *6-1 if you're on a phone. If you're on an app or browser, should be a button somewhere there to click in and get into the queue. Okay, we're going to take our next caller. And it looks like Kathy. What state you're from, Kathy? You got the mic.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Great. I was wondering if you have ever challenged Congress's stop, the ability of Congress to stop coining money and delegating that party or the power to a third party.
Well, they didn't. That was not put off to a third party, the coin of money. The Treasury does do that. This is an important point here. Everybody should listen very carefully, because, you know, the nickel is the original nickel. Back in 2008 or 2009, they tried to remove the nickel out of the nickel. And right now the nickel has a nickel and copper in it, and it's got the same metals that it's had in proportion going all the way back for almost 200 years. And so in 2008 or 9, when they tried to remove it, it didn't get passed, so it's still there. Although the penny doesn't have copper in it, and you know, our silver coins don't have silver in it, you know, but they do have copper. I don't know what other metals. I don't remember. I have to go look them up. But here's the thing, okay? The face value of those coins have followed inflation, whether it goes up or whether it goes down. And it's guaranteed by the government. It's coined by, by the government itself, by the Treasury. So my point is this: don't turn your change in. Keep your change. Because when we get into a total collapse and then we return back to gold and silver, which is the plan, that's the Trump plan, go back to gold and silver. So once we go back to gold and silver, all those coins will maintain its face value in the corrected, what would you call it? I guess the corrected value going back to, silver and gold ratio is 20 to 1. So that nickel will have huge power. But it's not just the nickel. Even all of the coins that are not silver but should be silver, they will have its full value. And my point is this. If you have, let's say, $20 in quarters, okay, and the reset goes through, that $20 in quarters is equal to 1 ounce of gold. Because the ratio between gold and silver is 20 to 1. 20 silver dollars equals 1 ounce of gold. And an ounce of gold is a $20 piece. Okay? And that'll bring us back to where we belong. And that's in a world without inflation at all. And that's where we got to get to, where inflation doesn't impact us anymore. And
is that 1913 prices?
Well, that would go back to, that would go back to 1913. Before that, of course, but yes, and it'll go back all the way back to the beginning of this nation when our Constitution came into effect.
How is that progressing? Is it in litigation? Is it presented by a bill through Congress?
Is what in litigation? What are you thinking?
Well, the devaluing of the currency, the correction.
That's called a collapse, but it's going to be a controlled collapse because Trump has already prepared the new process to go back to gold and silver. The big thing is the re-education of the people to understand the money system once it's moved over, because remember the value of it is going to be so powerful and so strong, and I'll give you an example. And let's see, if you go under Start a Committee of Safety and you come down to Handbooks, Videos, and Tools, and I'm showing this on the desktop. You're on a phone, unless you're on...
Right.
Yeah, so you're not seeing this. Okay, but anyway, if you come down to that page and you go down to the list down here, there's a list of Committee of Safety organizing and instructional PDF documents. And down towards the bottom, you'll see 3/4 of a penny worth, okay? And that'll give you an example of the value of money going back into those days. For instance, a loaf of bread was 6 cents. A gallon of gas.
Right.
A gallon of milk was 35 cents. So these, a new car was $490. A new house was $3,395. Average rent per month was $83.33. Okay, so that's the power of the money going back to gold and silver. Now, of course, your income will have to be adjusted to that too. But because there's no inflation and everything gets back to an equal base, everybody will be able to actually live, and survive. So.
What about digital currency? They seem to be pushing us into digital currency.
I am so surprised at Trump that he went into that, because it still gets back to backed by nothing. I've looked at that, trying to figure this out, and they got a lot of stuff going on how it works, but nothing about value. There is no value. There's nothing that backs it up. History recalls, and if you watch, what's the name? We have it. I believe this video is in our civics course. So there's a video on money, the Money Masters. I think it's a two-part video. So I think it's an hour each, or maybe 2 hours each. I think it's an hour each. But we have those videos in our civics course. And he goes through the process of the money. And he goes to lay out, and he talks about, all the different things that governments have used to try to, print money and then something that would be stable. And anything other than gold and silver throughout history, going back over 2,000 years, has failed every time.
I know. I know, Bitcoin, and that's what concerns me.
Yeah, Bitcoin is no difference. There's no way that that can continue. It's nothing. It's a Ponzi scheme on its face. Think about this. People came in the beginning. They bought it for dirt cheap. I don't know what a Bitcoin cost in the beginning, but let's say it cost $10, okay? And they claim with a Bitcoin, you can actually go out and buy a house now or a fancy car. I mean, that means the people who came in early, is making the money and running off the backs of the latecomers coming in. It's going to collapse. It has to collapse. I don't see how it can continue.
Okay. Do you know of any litigation out there regarding debanking?
What do you mean by debanking?
Well, two instances. A relative of mine had their money automatically deposited. She's an elder. It was my mother. Mm-hmm. She's in her 90s. She had her money would automatically be deposited into Wells Fargo Bank every month, and it would transfer from her checking account to her savings. Because she did not withdraw any money out of her savings in 90 days, they made a rule that they would lock her account, and they locked it. She went into the bank to get her money, and they refused to give it to her. I went with her, and I was shut down as well. And, I mean, it got real heated. I actually had called the authorities saying, what's going on here? This is financial abuse of a senior. And I said, well, she's got a second account. She's got a checking account. Let's withdraw some money from there. And they closed the window. They said, we reserve the right to refuse service. So they kept all her savings, all her checking. And when I called the police to make a report for financial abuse, they sided with the bank, saying, they didn't abuse her financially because you would have to prove they made a profit. I said, well, by keeping her money, that in itself is a profit. They said, and blocking her from her own money, that's abuse. They said they didn't block her. She can still go to the ATM and withdraw some money. I thought it was absurd.
It is.
And I felt like they had shut me totally down. And I was so mad. I wrote it up. And I posted on every ATM around the bank, but it didn't do any good. I mean, they kept her money.
So I mean, like, do you mind if I ask how much money is she got in the bank and she can't get out?
A few thousand dollars, but to someone in their 90s, that's her life savings.
Right now, today, a few thousand dollars. Everybody needs a few thousand dollars because everything is crazy out there. You know?
Right.
But. I'm perplexed by this one. I've never heard this before. I don't understand how they can prevent her from taking the money. It is true.
It's a brand new rule.
Pardon me? Did she try to go to the ATM machine and take money out?
Yeah, but it limits you to $100. It doesn't,
$750 is the limit. I hear it's going to $1,000.
Right. She wanted to withdraw money, most of her money, and they wanted to keep
everything.
It, and they ultimately kept it.
Have you tried to close the account?
They wouldn't let her close it. They said the account is frozen. There's nothing you can do. We need to do research because she has not, made any withdrawal. Who withdraws money every 90 days from a savings account? It's a savings account. People save money in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're making money every day that money's in there.
Right, exactly. So in my mind, that was financial abuse. They're still holding her money.
Worse than that, it's fraud. They're stealing. It's fraud.
Exactly. That's the position I took, and they took the position that, I tried to film them. They said you can't film. This is private property.
Another question. This new rule that they made. Was that rule made after she had deposited the money?
Oh, yeah. She's had that account for decades.
Okay, well, what do they call it? I'm trying to think. There's a legal name for this. ipso facto law, I think it is, something like that. In other words, you can't make a rule or a law, and because it, you know, an account, in a checking account or a savings account is kind of, is a contract ultimately, and you can't just add on to the contract without the meeting of the minds and negotiating an agreement. There has to be an agreement. This is a lawsuit. I don't see how it can't be won. It should be won, hands down. And the problem is, it's probably not enough money to take it into the courts. I mean, you're not going to go get a lawyer because they'll take every dime you have, plus whatever's in that account. So, I mean, forget about it. So you'd have to do it yourself. And if you don't understand, and again, this is where I get back to, people don't know how to defend themselves in a court of law. Everyone should understand when they're being abused and when they're being defrauded and how to deal with this problem and take it into the courts and sue these people. And this is, to me, a slam dunk case, or it should be. But you are going up against the status quo because banks are institutions are part of the status quo system. So they're going to do everything they can to protect the banks. And, you know, the Federal Reserve, and that it brings in the IRS, and they're going to put a gun to the judge's head, which they already know that that's going to be it. So the status quo is the law of the land.
Right, and I actually, a couple years ago, I tried to file a complaint against Bank of America and on a somewhat similar issue. And when I filed it with the Attorney General's office, they said, in California, we will not, there are like 5 or 8 banks you cannot file a complaint against. You have to go through Congress.
Well,
are you aware of that?
You can go to federal court. I mean, but again, then it costs money. And
right.
So, again, you have the same problem.
But they won't take consumer complaints.
This wouldn't be a it wouldn't be that kind of a complaint. But this is really weird. I've never even heard of
it. Yeah, it was really ugly. It was really ugly.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. I don't know why you can't close an account. That doesn't make any sense either.
They said they froze it.
Only the law can freeze it. Where did they freeze it? What law did they took? They have to go to court to freeze an account. They can't freeze an account.
Right. They wouldn't let her take any money out. Seemed wrong.
How did it get frozen? Who froze it?
The bank froze it for inactivity, was what they told her. And I said, how could it be inactivity when every month her check goes into her checking account and there's an automatic movement from checking to savings? And they said, yeah, but she didn't move it. It was electronic.
Boy, you wouldn't talk about criminals, huh? Wow.
It was awful. Wells Fargo, I just absolutely hate them.
Oh, well, they're evil, and Bank of America is probably worse.
Yeah.
Two banks, forget about it. Well, look at anything but a credit union. I wouldn't even go to a bank. I'd go to a credit union. It's the only bank I would ever deal with. You know, when I went after banks, okay, and because I was dealing with the IRS, and this is going back some years, and so I sued all the banks that I had any kind of business going on in. And the only one that ever responded and yielded to my my requirements, okay, in the paperwork, was the credit union. That was the only one.
Yeah.
Well, the other banks had 2 other banks at the time, and you know they just said to tighten up and wanted to go to battle and so on. So, again, banks are a problem, and I wouldn't go to anything but a credit union.
Right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And by the way, there's nobody else in the queue. I don't know if anybody wants to get into the queue. *601 if you're on a phone and. And there should be a button there if you're on an app or browser. So let me, okay, we got Jim from PA. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? Only got one other person now. *601 if you're on a phone, and should be a button there for an app or browser. Okay, Jim, Pennsylvania, you got it. You got the mic. Jim, you should be unmuted. Yep, you're unmuted. Maybe you're muted on your end. M- Not hearing you, Jim.
Okay, I was muted. I'm sorry.
There you go. We got you.
Okay, in reference to the caller just called in about the 90-year-old lady that had her money froze. Yeah. Now, they did that with my 90-year-old mother, but what happened is they put a charge on it for inactivity. But I have a follow-up question about that.
I don't know how they can even do that. They're making money on the money already if it's in a savings account.
Well, the reason I called in, John, my question, this is the one I wanted to get to. Had the individual put, without all rights reserved, without prejudice, UCC 1-308, would that have worked?
Did you already have the right? You don't have to write it down, so it probably wouldn't work.
Okay. That was my question, John.
Probably not. Look, they're just thieves, and they're getting away with it. They take advantage of the people, and they know you're not going to spend more money to get money, number one. And it's just a problem, and they're just evil. That's all there is to it. Look, this is all these setups, all our woes, ultimately, as far as the government is concerned, our relationship with the government at every single level, all our woes, every single one of them, is caused by the Bar Association, okay? They're the ones that have created this whole mess everywhere and anywhere. So we have to resurrect the 13th Amendment. All right, if you have nothing else, Jim.
That's all, John. Thank you. Good night.
All right. Anyway, nobody else in the queue right now, so if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1. If you're on a phone, and if not, if you're on an app or browser, there should be a button. Meanwhile, if nobody has anything, maybe we'll go through some things. I was thinking about talking the book that I had written concerning memorandums of law. And I wrote that book. There's a lot of memorandums of law in the government by consent, how to have government by consent book. But I have a lot more in these memorandums of law, and also they've been updated in that particular book also. But if nobody has anything, maybe I'll read the introduction to that book. I'll give a minute or so to see if anybody gets into the queue, and if not, then maybe that's what we'll look at, something education-wise. Okay, I'll try to keep an eye on... matter of fact, let me hit next question. I don't think... And this way, if someone gets into the queue, the mic will probably be open, and you can just yell out that, get my attention, and we'll take the question instead of reading. But anyway, I'm going to read the preface. It is quite long, so I may not read the whole thing. Maybe I'll jump around a little bit. I don't know. But the preface of this book, this is the preface of the book. And again, let me go up to the top. Just to see, this is called the Memorandums of Common Law, and got the table of contents here. It goes through a lot of the different memorandums we have. You know, abrogation of the law of the land. We did a memorandum on that. Abrogation of the United States of America. We did a memorandum on that. We did a lot of them, and we also did one particularly on the Bible in school, how they took the Bible out of school. But in any event, the purpose of this book is to provide memorandums of law in support of the common law, to educate the people of our true heritage, and to reveal the destructive alterations of our republic by enemies domestic. Our heritage is in the law, and our inheritance is liberty. If we, the people, do not restore our republic, acknowledge God, and pass it down to our posterity, we will fail to continue as one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The Declaration of Independence is the foundation of American law, upon which the Constitution and its capstone Bill of Rights rests. The Declaration of Independence was a covenant with God, desiring to live under his law and thereby receive the blessings of his liberty. Any who would endeavor to interpose will in time be met by his wrath. Whereas in the preamble of our Constitution, we the people ordained and established that the main purpose of government is to establish justice and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. We are not under Roman law, as barristers would have us to believe. We are not a democracy, as tyrants would have us to believe. We are not a godless nation, as atheists would have us to believe. Whereas we are, in fact, a common law republic. And I from now on, I really want to try to really impress the word a natural law republic. So anyway, a common law, a natural law republic, a Christian nation under the laws of nature and of nature's God. Thomas Jefferson summed it up when he said, "My God, how little do my countrymen know what a precious blessings they are in possession of, and which no other people on earth enjoy." America was founded upon 8 ancient principles. The man who discovered America's freedom formula, Thomas Jefferson. It is doubtful that any of the founders could have brought to this assignment a more profound and comprehensive training in history and political philosophy than Thomas Jefferson. Even by modern standards, the depth and breadth of his education are astounding. Here is a summary of his background. Jefferson had begun the study of Latin, Greek, and French at the age of 9. At age of 16, he had entered the College of William and Mary at Williamsburg as an advanced student. At the age of 19, he had graduated and immediately commenced 5 years of intense study with George Wyeth, the first professor of law in America. During this period, he often studied 12 to 14 hours per day. When he was examined by the bar, not the British bar now, there's a big difference between the bar, and they've taken that word bar, capped it, and gave it a different meaning. So it's not the British bar, but the bar, which is just the separation between where the people, the audience, or the people would be seated who are viewing the case, and everyone involved with that case is on the other side of that bar. You have the jury on the other side of the bar. If it's a criminal case, it'd be a prosecutor. And of course, defendant with his representation. So the lawyers, the judge, or the magistrate, if it's a common law process, they'd all be on that one side of the bar. So, and a lot of our founding fathers were lawyers, but again, I want to impress, they were not bar attorneys. They hated bar attorneys, okay? Purpose of the bar attorney was sent from Britain, 1750, to destroy our judicial process that we already had and was enjoying when we were colonists. Okay. So when he was examined by the bar, not the British bar, he seemed to know more than the men who were giving him the examination. By the time Jefferson had reached early adulthood, he had gained proficiency in 5 languages. He had studied the Greek and Roman classics. He had studied European and the English history. He had carefully studied both the Old and the New Testament. While studying the history of ancient Israel, Jefferson made a significant discovery. He saw that at one time, the Israelites had practiced the earliest and most efficient form of representative government. As long as the Israelites followed their fixed pattern of constitutional principles, they flourished. When they drifted from it, disaster overtook them. Jefferson thereafter referred to his constitutional pattern as the ancient principles. Jefferson was also surprised to find that the Anglo-Saxons somehow, and that would be the Germanic tribes, somehow got hold of some of these ancient principles and followed a pattern almost identical to that of the Israelites until around the 8th century AD. It is interesting that when Jefferson was writing his draft for the Virginia Constitution, let me make this a little bigger. Okay. Let me see where I was. Okay, you saw that one time the Israelites had practiced the earliest and most efficient form of representation. I think I read all that, ancient principles. Jefferson was also surprised. Okay, we read that too. Okay, it is interesting that when Jefferson was writing his draft for the Virginia Constitution, he was already emphasizing the need to return to the ancient principles. For 17 days, Jefferson composed and revised his rough draft of the Declaration of Independence. The major portion of the Declaration is taken up with a long series of charges against King George III. However, these were nearly all copied from Jefferson's draft of the Virginia Constitution and his summary view of the rights of the British America. To copy these charges into the Declaration would not have taken him more than a single day. What was he doing the other 16 days? It appears that he spent most of the remaining time trying to structure into the first two paragraphs at least 8 of the ancient principles which he had come to admire. His view on each of these principles are rounded out in other writings, and from these various sources we are able to identify the following fundamental principles in the first two paragraphs of the Declaration of Independence. Number one, sound government should be based on 8 self-evident truths. These truths should be so obvious, so rational, and so morally sound that their authenticity is beyond reasonable dispute. Two, the equal stations of mankind here on earth is a cosmic reality, an obvious and inherent aspect of the laws of nature and of nature's God. Three, this presupposes, as a self-evident truth, that the Creator made human beings equal to their in their rights, equal before the bar of justice, and equal in his sight. Of course, individual attributes and personal circumstances in life vary widely. Four, these rights, which have been bestowed by the Creator on each individual, are unalienable, that is, they cannot be taken away or violated, without the offender coming under the judgment and the wrath of the Creator. A person may have other rights, such as those which have been created as a vested right by statute, but vested rights are not unalienable. Our three branches of government have vested rights. They can be altered or eliminated at any time, of course only by we the people. Number five, among the most important of the unalienable rights are the right to life, the right to liberty, the right to pursue whatever course of life a person may desire in search of happiness, so long as it does not invade the inherent rights of others. Six, the most basic reason for community or a nation is to set up a system of government, is to assure its inhabitants that the rights of the people shall be protected and preserved. Seven, and because this is so, it follows that no office or agency of government has any right to exist except with the consent of the people or their representatives. And by the way, that's where the quo warranto comes in. By what authority do you act? And it's a very important writ. And by the way, you know, last time I was in court and I wrote a writ of errors to the judge, And the judge came back and told me they abrogated that, and he mentioned one of the rules. I have to go back and look to see what rule that might be and maybe do a paper on that, but maybe even take it into the court. But they abrogated all of the rights of writs to the free people, to the free man, okay? The right of habeas corpus, the right of any writ at all, actually, you know, the right of writ quo warranto, the right of a writ of error. It became a problem to them. They didn't like it, so they just wrote it into the rules, and through rules they abrogated it. They just cast it out, just like they closed the courts of justice. You know, they just closed the doors. You can't get in. They've erased it from all their paperwork. You know, there's no place on there. When I file papers, I used to take, you have to file the paper and pay their fee. Here in New York, it's $210 to get an index number. And when you put that in, you have to check boxes on what this case is all about. And there is no place for a court of record, no place for a court of justice. And everything is focused in on civil law, at least it is here in New York. And so what I did is I copied that and made it look exactly like that, but I added in things like court of record and proceeding according to the common law and so on. And, you know, I've filed some cases with that, and they never picked up on that. But they don't care. They're just evil. They'll do what they want anyway. Let me see where we're at. Well, I don't know whether I read 7 and 8, because if I was, I read 7. Let me read 8. I don't know whether I read 8. It also follows that if a government, either by malfeasant or neglect, fails to protect those rights, or even worse, if the government itself begins to violate those rights, then it is the right and the duty of the people to regain control of their affairs, and that's what we're trying to do, and set up a form of government which will serve the people better. Now, we're not trying to reset up. We just want to resurrect our original constitution. So we want to resurrect it. We want our courts of justice to open. And we've been working on that for quite some time. But we'll see where we go as time goes on. Unalienable rights established in the Declaration of Independence. The unalienable right to dissolve political bands for cause. 2, unalienable right to separate and equal stations with other nations. 3, unalienable right to be under the laws of nature's God. 4, truth is self-evident. 5, all men are created equal. 6, we are endowed by our Creator with unalienable rights. 7, governments are instituted to secure unalienable rights. 8, governments derive their just power from the consent of the governed. 9, unalienable rights to alter or abolish government. 10, unalienable right to institute new government. 11. Under absolute despotism, unalienable right to throw off such government. 12. Unalienable right to install new guards for future security, and that is one of the things we're pursuing. 13. God's people may appeal to the supreme judge of the world. 14. Unalienable rights to be free and independent states. So all of these rights are established in the Declaration of Independence. It is the foundation of our law. It's the foundation of our Constitution and its capstone Bill of Rights. All law is set upon that. And we're under the laws of nature and nature's God. That's the law of the land defined right there in the Declaration of Independence. But they ignore it and they do as they please. And we let them get away with it because we're ignorant. We don't know these things. We don't understand these things. And we've entrusted any problem we have, we've entrusted into the hands of the very people that betrayed us and destroyed this nation, the bar attorney. To solve the assault upon our republic seems overwhelming, and it is. But God has sent us a type of Osiris in President Donald Trump. See the book of Ezra. To dismantle the deep state and bring the new world order under judgment. See Isaiah chapter 14. This provides an opportunity for we the people to reclaim our government and bind them down with the chains of the Constitution. And this starts with an education of our heritage and an acknowledgement of our Creator and His laws. And then, and only then, will we be able to enjoy the full blessings of God. Like our founding fathers, we too can be empowered through the knowledge and the exercising of our God-given liberties within His will. 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sins and will heal their land. And I do believe and hope that that is what's happening now. Matthew 11:28-29. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. The unalienable rights of the sovereign people to self-governance was ordained by God through a covenant between the people and their God, via the Declaration of Independence, where we the people assumed among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled us. Whereas common law governs all men, and we the people via the Constitution are the authority of all law that governs all state and national governments. And when such servants of government suppress the people and robs them of their sovereignty, it is the right of the people to alter it by removing the tyrants via recall or indict them, or abolish it, in the deep state, that is, via self-enforcement, and if necessary, under Amendment 2. We the people will surrender to none but God as we stand upon the founding documents. Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. God's covenant is eternal and cannot be broken on behalf of another. This law is called common law, or natural law, because it is common unto all men, or natural law, because it is innate, written in the hearts of men. Thereby the authority vested in we the people, instituted by degree in our founding documents, created a republican form of government to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Let me just make a note here. If anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6 and a 1, or if you're on an app or a browser, should be a button. We the people, through this Constitution, empowered elected and appointed servants to guard the same. The Constitution cannot be altered or abolished by our legislative servants. But they have done that through rules. They just make rules up to abolish it. And that's what they've done. That's why we don't have courts of justice anymore. The Constitution cannot be altered or abolished by our legislative servants who took an oath to protect it. Any judge who does not comply with his oath to the Constitution for the United States wars against that Constitution and engages in acts in violation of the supreme law of the land. The judge is engaged in acts of treason. By the way, that's a Supreme Court ruling. We the people are free and independent, sovereign people, with the unalienable right of due process, and with no contract with any administrative foreign court, which is foreign to us. Any administrative court is foreign to the people. Thereby, we owe the state nothing and are under no obligation that would require the people to seek leave from any servant who has no jurisdiction or authority over we the people. We are not subjects of the states, but the masters thereof. It is the public policy of this state that public agencies exist to aid the conduct of the people's business. The people of this state do not yield their sovereignty to the agencies which serve them. At the Revolution, the sovereignty devolved on the people, and they are truly the sovereigns of the country. But they are sovereigns without subjects, with none to govern but themselves. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. Remember, we the people ordained and established this Constitution for them. We are the lawmakers. We are above that law. They are under that law. We're all under the law of God, though. The very meaning of the under federal law, which is applicable to all states, the U.S. Supreme Court stated that if a court is without authority, its judgments and orders are regarded as nullities. That's an important fact to understand. They are not voidable, but simply void and form no bar to a recovery sought, even prior to a reversal in opposition to them. They constitute no justification, and all persons concerned in executing such judgment or sentences are considered in law as trespassers. Any servant who resists these truths, war against the governor of the universe, war against the Constitution, and wars against the people. Sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to the law, for it is the author and source of the law. People need to understand it. We are the lawmakers. Congress is not the lawmakers of the people. We've given them certain authority. We didn't give anyone a right in government. We didn't give the president rights or any additional rights. We didn't give Congress rights. We didn't give anybody in government anywhere any rights. We gave them certain authority, and they have to act underneath the authority we gave them. And so, you know, again, we're all under God's law, but they are under our law. And we've given them the powers to write law in Article 1 of the Constitution, to write law to govern themselves, to govern government agencies, to govern interstate commercial activities. The common law is the real law, the supreme law of the land. The codes, rules, regulations, policy, and statutes are not the law. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since its unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment. In legal contemplation, it is as inoperable as if it had never been passed. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principle follows that it imposes no duties, confers no rights, creates no office, bestows no power or authority on anyone, affords no protection, and justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing law, indeed insofar as a statute runs counter to the fundamental laws of the land, the Constitution. It is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no court is bound to enforce it. There, every man is independent of all laws except those prescribed by nature. He is not bound by any institutions formed by his fellow men. Without his consent, under our system of government, upon the individuality and intelligence of the citizen, the state does not claim to control him, except as his conduct to others, leaving him the sole judge as to all that affects himself. I know I wanted to make another comment here on this, if I can remember. I don't remember. All right. The people need to take a stand and exercise their right of government by consent. President Trump has declared that he intends to give power back to the people. Unfortunately, people don't know how to have government by consent. It's been hidden from them. Thomas Jefferson said, "I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of society but the people themselves." And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. Our government has failed to do that. This is the true corrective of abuse of constitutional power. These memorandums are the beginning of understanding America's problems and solutions, and National Liberty Alliance is informing the people's discretion through education and action to take back our government. If we, the people, refuse to be properly educated and exercise our unalienable right of government by consent, then unprincipled men will enslave us. It's only a matter of time, and we will be right back under the tyrants again. James Madison said, "Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who means to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power knowledge gives." How the judiciary stole our republic and courts of law. Esquires are taught and convinced that we are under Roman law and a democracy fashioned under Rome through outcome-based education and having no proper K-12 education. They also, through an outcome-based education, receive the lie and are transformed unwittingly into the minions of the New World Order, and thereby covertly change our republic in the minds of men, of the people, to a democracy, and our courts from common law courts to chancery courts. Their belief in what they've been taught is so strongly embedded into their minds that they are blinded to the truth. The truth being, we are a common law constitutional republic fashioned under Israel and the Bible, and that we the people, being sovereign, ordained the law. The following memorandums of law reveal how foreign banksters and barristers, herein after esquires, stole our courts and changed our republic to a democracy and enslaved we the people via a statutory prison constructed under Roman law, which was fashioned under Babylonian law. The destruction of our republic required an army of well-trained minions working diligently for the New World Order. They accomplished this by opening bar schools and over time convinced the people little by little that we are under a civil law and not common law. This was initiated when the King of England sent swarms of esquires in 1750. When we were then the 13 colonies, to change our courts of justice under God's law into chancery law courts under man's law. This was solidified in 1938 when Barr steered United States Supreme Court under the supposed authority of the Rules Enabling Act, established the Barr written Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and the states steered by the insidious Barr followed suit, thus replacing common law with civil law throughout America. Under the American Bar Association's rules, Establishing Act of 1934, the 73rd Congress unlawfully enabled the United States Supreme Court the authority to prescribe rules under 28 U.S.C. subsection 2072A, thereby allegedly abrogating the rules of common law. The United States Supreme Court, the federal judiciary, then covertly abused that authority to conceal and abridge the supreme law of the land under Federal Rule 2. According to Federal Judicial Center, a government agency, on September 16, 1938, pursuant to its de facto authority under the repugnant Rules Enabling Act of 1934 via Rule 2, which stated that the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Under the new rules, suits in equity, which again that is, legislative law, and suits of common law, that's the true law of the land, laws of nature, nature's God, were grouped together under the term civil actions, claiming that rigid applications of common law rules brought about injustice. Just think about that statement. They also, over time, changed their republic in the minds of the people to a democracy. Our founding fathers were clear on two issues. We are not a democracy, and that no republic can survive political parties. Only we, the sovereign people, can ordain and establish laws, and governments own, and governments, let me reread that. Only we, the sovereign people, can ordain and establish laws and governments. Only we, the sovereign people, are endowed by the Creator with certain unalienable rights. Governments are not. Therefore, all latter construction upon the Organic Act of 1871 is as null and void as is the Act itself, which attempted to supplant our constitutional republican form of government that our servants were entrusted to guarantee by oath. Now think about what they said. They claim that God's law, the application of God's law, brought about injustice. Just think about that statement. Unbelievable. Courts of law versus courts of chancery. Esquires covertly changed our constitutional courts of law to repugnant chancery courts. Again, I just want to make the note here, if anybody has a question or comment, you can get into the queue, star 6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and app or browser should be a button. Meanwhile, I'll continue reading this. And again, this is the introduction to the Memorandum of Law book. And anybody interested in purchasing this book, let's see, you can find this under Welcome tab. Go to Books by John Darash, and you'll find a list of all the books that I've written here. And one of them is Memorandum of Law right here. And you can click on that for details, and if you want to purchase it, you can purchase it. Okay, back to the reading here. In the United States federal courts, magistrate judges are judges appointed to assist U.S. district court judges in the performance of their duties. Magistrate judges generally oversee first appearances of criminal defendants, set bail, and conduct other administrative duties. And by the way, this is what I wanted to bring up before, I think, and that is, you know, an administrative court does not have the power to fine or incarcerate. Think about that statement. That's a fact. Administrative courts and all courts running under legislative law is administrative courts. They do not have the power to fine or incarcerate. If they have a situation where they feel that an individual that's working for the government or someone operating in commercial activity, that maybe they broke the law and they should be fined for that or they should be incarcerated for that, then they have to come to we the people and ask for an indictment, and we have to decide whether we will give them an indictment or not. A court of justice then must open up where the people decide the facts and the law and the penalty with an eye on restitution, not making the government rich. And so that's how bad it is. With that statement, with that point of view, everyone that's in jail right now doesn't belong there. Guilty or not, they don't belong there because they never had true due process. They've never been heard in a true court of law. They've been heard by judges who control the juries through stacking the juries, and they decide what the law is. They decide what the penalty is. And they never, ever, ever give restitution in criminal cases. Never. And even in their, equity courts where they might hear cases and make decisions according to the legislation that we've empowered them to write, they're able then to execute whatever it is that's in that legislation. But they cannot fine, and they cannot incarcerate. That requires due process in a court of law. You can't take someone's things or their money, which is their things, without going through a court of justice with due process. And administrative courts cannot possibly give due process. Okay, let me see where we're at here now. And I'll pick up here. ALJs, administrative law judges, serve as neutral decision makers in employment proceedings handling cases such as employee grievances and disciplinary actions. ALJ rulings shape federal employment policies by interpreting statutes and regulations in case contexts, influencing future policies and administrative practices. The same is true in any state court that is proceeding in equity under statutes or contract. Equity jurisdiction is a general sense, the jurisdiction belonging to a court of equity, but more particularly, the aggregate of those cases, controversies, and occasions which form proper subjects for the exercise of the power of a chancery court. Whenever any of the aforesaid equity courts seize jurisdiction in a criminal case or in suits of common law, they fraudulently proceed as summary judgments, whereas any proceeding by which controversy is settled, a case disposed of, or trial conducted in a prompt and simple manner without the aid of a jury, without presentment or indictment. Equity courts and law courts are formed being such as possess the jurisdiction of a chancellor, apply the rules of the principles of chancery law, and follow the procedure in equity, the latter such as have no equitable power, but administer justice according to the rules and practice of the common law. The terms equity and chancery, courts of equity and courts of chancery, are constantly used as synonymous in the United States. Civil law, Roman civil law are convertible phrases, meaning the same system of jurisprudence. That rule of action which every particular nation, commonwealth, or city has established particularly for itself, more properly called municipal law, to distinguish it from the laws of nature and from international law. Whenever any of the aforesaid chancery courts seize jurisdiction in criminal cases or in suits of common law, they fraudulently proceed with unlawful summary proceedings outside of the regular course of the common law. Such proceedings lack due process and are in violation of the following. Amendment 5, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless brought a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now, I want to make a point here. An infamous crime is not labeled such as defined by the crime itself. An infamous crime is stated to be an infamous according to the penalty. So if you are imprisoned, that's what makes it infamous. Now, they will try to make you think that it says something else, but you can look this up in Black's Law, and the Supreme Court has ruled on this also, on what an infamous crime is. Okay? They will tell you an infamous crime is something something above a misdemeanor, and that that a misdemeanor, that they can put you in jail for a year, up to a year, without getting an indictment. That's what they will lead you to believe. But nothing could be further from the truth. And they exercise that all the time, by the way. Okay. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury, not a stacked jury, an impartial jury, of the state and the district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and the cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Remember, not representation, assistance of counsel. Amendment 7. In suits of common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. But they've abrogated them. So they changed this Amendment 7. And they've changed the Constitution, too. The law of the land. They've changed the Declaration of Independence. Gone. Not here no more. We don't have it. Just a piece of paper to them. No power. No authority. Doesn't prevent them of anything. They can do whatever they want. And they do. Many, if not all, of these chancery courts claim that they can try people for misdemeanors and thereby fine and or incarcerate them without an indictment, claiming that a misdemeanor is not an infamous crime, whereas an offense or is infamous depends on the punishment which may be imposed. It is not the character of the crime, but the nature of the punishment which renders the crime infamous. Therefore, any alleged crime that results in a prison sentence is infamous. Only the people can sentence an individual to prison. Judges do it all day long. They do it in town courts, they do it in village courts, they do it in state courts, they do it in federal courts. They do it in every court. Because we the people are too ignorant to know how things work. Courts of record and courts not of record. The following is also true in state courts. A court of law are courts of record that proceed according to the common law. All criminal cases require an injured party, and the state cannot be the injured party. Now, the people, you know, if someone was, for instance, stealing money from the state, then they're stealing it from the people. So, of course, there is an injured party. It's we, the people, in those kind of cases. Okay, so we have to be careful with that. But the state cannot be the injured party in itself. The people can. The tribunal is a free and independent jury of 12 people whose decision is final and from which there is no appeal. It is we the people that bring an indictment, and it is we the people that decide the facts, law, remedy, and or penalty, not a sole hired servant judge. The servant has no authority over the master. We the people are the masters. Administrative courts are equity, statutory courts, not of record, that proceed according to the statutes and do not yield to common law, and whose end results are the will of the state. These courts do not have the power to fine or incarcerate and are called nisi prius courts. In Latin, it means for unless first. So unless we agree first, they have no power or authority over us. So how is it that we agree to these courts? Well, if we perform interstate commerce activity, you know, commercial activity, then we then now are agreeing to the laws that we the people gave the authority of the legislators the right law to control that interstate commercial activity. Same thing, we agree with these statutes and these rules, and we agree that they could be applied upon us if we work for a government agency. Okay, and that's the only way they're going to apply these things to us. But the people don't know that, so it's applied upon them, and they don't know that because they don't know the law. And we need to realize we must know the law. If we want liberty, we need to know the law. And the law is very simple. It's really common sense, but it is the Constitution. It is the Declaration of Independence. It is the Bill of Rights. Let me see where I'm at. Okay, meaning, I didn't realize that, meaning people are not obligated to participate in these courts unless they agree first. They do so by participating in commercial activities or employment within the government. Whenever an individual is summoned and thereby hijacked into a secret nisi prius court, or their case as a plaintiff is hijacked into a secret nisi prius court, big secret, they don't tell us. People don't understand. They don't understand the words anyway. The judge and barristers are guilty of fraud on the court in violation of 42 U.S.C. subsection 1983 for commandeering their victims secretly into jurisdictions unknown as they refuse to state on the record the jurisdiction. I always require the other side to state the jurisdiction we're in. Even though I state it, they need to state it too on all their paperwork. They refuse to do that, because they're operating secret nisi prius courts. Whereas the law requires jurisdictions to appear on a record. Some examples of these kinds of courts are housing courts, Department of Labor courts, compensation courts, village courts, town courts, city courts, or any court proceeding in equity, in short, courts not of record. One of the ways that these nisi prius courts seize personam jurisdiction is by forcing the plaintiff to use the word complaint in opposition to an action at law. Never call, if you're coming in as the plaintiff and you're opening up a case, you never want to call it a complaint. I'm not complaining about anything. I'm exercising my right to exercise an action at law. And law, L-A-W, is common law, natural law. And even when the plaintiff refuses to comply and proceeds under an action at law, the courts proceed under civil law. A complaint is the first or interrogatory pleading on the part of the plaintiff in a civil action governed by statutes and not common law. Black's law defines civil law, and Roman civil law are convertible phrases meaning the same system of jurisprudence. Every federal district or state court is to have a court of record, also known as a natural law court, which is presided over by the people, which are 12 jurists. Then when an ALJ, administrative law judge, or justice presides as judge, it is an equity court under statutes and or contract. The Constitution is legislated law by we the people, also known as the law of the land. Thereby Amendment 6 is clear that judges cannot hear, decide, or sentence criminal cases. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed. We the people granted and defined judicial powers in Article 3, Section 2. The judicial powers shall extend to all cases in law and equity, whereas law is common law separate from equity. All codes, rules, and regulations are for government authorities only, not human creators, in accordance with God's laws. All codes, rules, and regulations are unconstitutional and lack in due process. The common law is the real law, the supreme law of the land. The codes, rules, regulations, policies, and statutes are not the law. Okay, I guess I'll read this final paragraph, and we'll be closing down in a couple minutes. The extent of the authority for an administrative law judge or justice to hear cases in law is limited in Article 3, Section 2, where we read, the judicial powers shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States. The key phrase concerning the law, meaning common law, is arising under this Constitution, which limits the extent of the federal court's ability to hear cases for cause alone, being understood that in law they can only judge the constitutionality of the law and thereby champion for the Constitution. Any issue in law beyond that must be heard by the people, also known as the petit jury, whereas cases under the law of the United States are understood as equity, also known as legislative law, and thereby administrative law. Thereby, any case under equity where a crime has been committed must be heard by the people, who being sovereign from the unalienable right of nullification. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the king. We are the king. His majesty in the eye of the law is always present. That king there is talking about Jesus Christ, the king of the court. We are, if we're sitting on a jury, we are in the king's bench. Okay? But as far as being the government is concerned, we are the kings and they are the servants. But God is king of our courts. He is the eternal king. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign makes the law. The consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the king. His majesty, that's God himself, in the eye of the law is always present in all his courts. Why? Because we're ruling from the heart, and he had written his law in our hearts. We know. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, so on and so forth. We know when a person has been injured. And he rules through our hearts. His majesty is in the eye of the law, is always present in all his courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his jury or his judges, also known as the petit jury, are the mirror by which the king's image is reflected. So. And right there is the point of us being a Christian nation. You know, who is the king of the court? If we don't acknowledge that we're a Christian nation and lift up the king, then a man is in charge, and we're under man's law. We're judged by men, by servants. How is it that a servant can judge a master? He cannot. But they do all day long, and we permit it. Why do we permit it? Because we're ignorant to the law. And again, the law brings us back to common sense, the construction of maxims. And remember, all law is constructive, line upon line, precept upon precept. It builds up. It's constructive. They constructed this in prison that we are, it's a statutory prison we live in, okay? And they constructed this all built upon the Organic Act of 1871. That was the foundation of their new law, which incorporated the United States of America and placed us under the thumb of man and not God, and therefore has built everything, and law is constructed upon that. Everything is constructed upon that. All the laws that they have built with the intent to imprison us is built upon that. Okay, anyway, we've come to the end of our program, and we'll be back next week, and hopefully more people will have more questions, but we'll see once where we go next week. I want people to think about, anybody taking the course, think about maybe we, those people taking the course, maybe we should get together and discuss some strategies and thoughts and ideas, because to do some of the things that I'm thinking of, we really need people within the states that we're going to go after individuals to be able to claim, first of all, the injury. We may do it from the perspective of the grand jury, and that we can do, just from, right here in, from New York itself through where the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is actually located, it's the location. And we can sue in any, we can do papers in any court. So maybe we'll proceed it from that perspective, but definitely still we need people who are educated so that we can start to do some investigation and we can start to pull together the necessary information we need to build a solid case of facts. Once we build a solid case of facts, then we apply the law of the land to it, which brings us back, of course, to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and common sense, building of maxims. Again, all law is constructive, one point upon another, precept upon precept, line upon line, a biblical principle. Okay, I do see we have one person in the queue, so we're going to close in a few minutes, but we'll give that person a minute. You got the mic.
Hi, John. This is Elizabeth out of Arizona. Thank you for reading that tonight. I'm not holding back or anything, but I'm really wading into this. I don't want to miss anything, what you were just talking about, I would be interested. I'm new at this, but I'd be interested in supporting that because I'm seeing things go on around me that are, you know, they're disturbing, but I can't do anything about them at this point, but it's something I could work toward or whatever you might be thinking of in terms of just learning how to develop this, the whole skill of it. So that, like what happened with the gentleman over the, I forget what it was, but the county, I guess there were some lakes that were going to be redone and
right.
And they succeeded in doing something and that's so helpful to people, you know, it means so much, you know. So anyway, I just wanted to say that and I appreciate you so much. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Okay, with that, we're going to end our program for the night, and Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday and pick it up from there. And anybody interested, we have Wednesday evening Bible studies, 7:30 Eastern Standard Time, right here in this room. So if you're interested in that, we're coming to the end of the Gospel of John. And after we finish the Gospel of John, which will probably be a couple of weeks, maybe 2-3 weeks, I think what we're going to do is, well, I know what we're going to do. We're going to do topical studies. And I want to approach particular studies that many people are out there teaching the wrong things that they don't understand because they're not looking at the Bible properly. You know, the Bible is its own dictionary. The Bible is its own interpreter. It's not open for private interpretation. That's a violation of Scripture. And, for instance, I think one of the first studies we want to do is war in heaven. I've never seen anybody who has properly interpreted what war in heaven is. But that's, I think, going to be one of our first topical studies. But we have a lot of, and also we'll be taking a list of different topics maybe that we might want to do a Bible study on and dig through the Scriptures and pray for wisdom and understanding to come to an understanding and conclusion of whatever the subject matter might be. But I do have a list, and I think I may read the list that I put together of topical studies that I think it's timely. Now is the time to really look at these things because I do believe we're close to the end. And so we need to understand these things. But again, people may see some topics we should discuss and do a study on, and we'll put that into the list too. Okay, with that, good night, everybody. See you next Monday. Thanks for coming.